50,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC, as Glenn Lamberts would say. It is Sunday, the 18th of February, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. I'm desperately trying to find
While you're doing that, I got one question.
Yeah.
Now, Jim Salmon was just in here.
Yeah.
And these mics smell a lot like peanut butter. And he was going out with a jar of Peter Pan peanut butter.
1111111111.
I hope he didn't smear it on these things.
All right.
They smell like it, though.
We should also say gong hei fat choy to all of our Asian listeners.
Choy. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, Chinese
it's
New
the year.
Year
of the ding hog hai. Or the perhaps the pig. I don't know which that would
pig.
Actually be.
Ding hai.
Right.
Say what?
Ding hai.
Okay.
Before we even get to the news, let me tell everybody what's going on with the archive server. It's down.
Really?
We know that. Thank
still?
You.
Still?
Yeah.
Still?
Yeah. Still?
Send checks to Nick.
Right. The problem has not been one of expertise or willingness. The problem has been one of cash. I've just moved the Soundbite server itself. The Soundbite site itself to a new server. You may find it's a little faster, and we'll be definitely dealing with the archive server hopefully this week. So be patient just a little bit longer, and we'll get to it as fast as we can.
I mean, it isn't your top priority?
Shockingly, it is my second priority. My first priority is making a living.
and keeping the wife and family happy.
And thus my second pray exactly. My second priority is the archive server. New credit cards. If you're one of the people who's gotten a new credit card lately, the kind that you can just pass in front of something.
Yeah, swipe them.
Yeah. You may be carrying that type of credit card. It can transmit your personal information to anyone who gets close to you. With a scanner, the new cards, millions of which have been issued over the past year, use RFID, RFID, radio frequency identification technology. RFID allows scanners to use radio signals at varying distances to read information stored on a computer chip. According to a study from academic and business researchers at the University of Massachusetts, RSA, and INIALTA, many of the cards will transmit your name, credit card number, and expiration date, but not the three-digit security code, in the clear to anyone with a scanner. One of the researchers provided an electronic copy of the report's just-finished final version. The draft version is available online. RFID is widely used to track shipments and store inventories. Now it's in credit cards, allowing users to swipe the cards past readers in, like, McDonald's and CVS and gas stations and every place else. It makes for quick and easy transactions, and Visa says more than 6 million contactless cards exist worldwide, and their number is growing rapidly. Unfortunately, the researchers said in their collection, the vast majority revealed the credit card name, the credit card number, and the expiration date when the researchers scanned them with a commercial RFID reader that had been modified to work with the credit cards. According to the FAQ on the study, the sample cards spanned all three major payment associations and several major issuing banks. According to Visa, the company's contactless card network uses an encrypted security code to verify a transaction that should protect against certain types of fraud. But again, it doesn't protect anyone from pulling the name and the number. So if you've got one of those contactless cards, build yourself a little Faraday cage.
Just like every new technology designed to help us has been perverted exploited. By the bad guys.
Yeah, they exploited.
Yeah, you can actually buy wallets now with Faraday cages built into them.
Nice.
I think, and you can find them online, and that's actually pretty cool. That should prevent somebody from reading it off your hip, but and I put that politely.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, who knows? All right, that's our news for right now. We'll go to the phones. Our first caller is Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Did you survive the snowstorm?
So far.
Okay. My question is, I've got a friend who I convinced to go to the Soundbite forum because she's having a lot of computer problems.
Sure.
She created an account. They sent her, you know, the password and username in an email, and they said, activate it. Fine. She wants to put it in, and he keeps telling her it's invalid. And she copied and pasted it directly like I told her to, and she still can't get in.
She may be copying a little too much, like a trailing space.
Yeah.
That then makes it a different...
That actually happens a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I even tried it, because, you know, I'm a little more experienced. I even tried it. She gave it to me, and I even tried it, and I put it in exactly no spaces, nothing. I can't get it. It says either invalid username or password, and we can't figure out how to change it.
What? All right, that's. I don't have an instant answer for you.
Without us asking you for the username and password, yeah. So we can try it here.
Right, right. Which we won't do on the air.
Nick, how about if I email you?
Well, that would be good. I won't be home at all much today, but you can email me or you can email Dave and.
Okay.
And email the Soundbites support.
I tried that. I tried that 4 days ago, and I still haven't gotten an answer. So I thought maybe I'd call you guys.
Yeah, 4 days ago was when I was starting to move the server.
Oh, okay.
So some of the stuff might have gotten lost.
Okay. So
or hasn't made it through yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So just email you then.
Yeah.
Ask Nick.
Nick at AskNick.com.
Yeah.
Nick at AskNick.com. Yeah. Okay.
But instead of copying and pasting...
I should mention first that that's not a general invitation to the public.
Yeah.
I tend to not answer questions at home. It is the one place in my life I'm trying to not do computer things.
But we don't want to deal with password issues on the public air where anyone could...
Right. This is a specific and special instance.
And one of the things you might try, Linda, is instead of copying and pasting, try typing it slowly and carefully. Because maybe when you are doing the copy, you're getting a trailing space or a return or something like that.
I've tried everything, and she's frustrated. She says, you told me this is a great place. I can't even get in.
All right. Well, we did just move the server, and while I
that
tested...
That could have been part of it.
Right. Yeah. I tested a bunch of stuff. I did not test that specific thing because I already had a...
Username and password.
So I will make sure that particular thing gets checked so we'll know.
Yeah, I even tried it before I called you guys, and it still doesn't work.
Right. It may well be that in moving it, I screwed something up there. And like I said, I didn't think... Yeah, we're all right.
Okay. Now, this is not for the general public. Nick is doing this as a special favor to me.
Exactly.
Don't anybody else do it.
Exactly. I'll just throw them away. I don't feel compelled.
Okay.
You know, I answer for Ask Nick. I answer here on Sundays. People just generally sending me stuff. I put it in one of my folders to answer on the air or
Dave and
somewhere else.
Dave and I run into that all the time, too. In fact, well, Dave Moore, because his name's on the side of the truck. I haven't got my company name on the side of the truck yet.
Yeah.
But my license plate is.
And that's why.
That is.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, I run into problems. Maybe problems too strong a word. But with the users group, you know, there are places we answer questions for free. But this is our business. You call our business, and there's a charge to answer a question.
Yeah. Well, I was at... it doesn't matter. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Get the stories you want when
you're on the list. Who's on that list is a matter of grave importance.
Are we talking about the enemies list? I know. No. I was on Nixon's. I don't know if I'm on the current one. I probably
know.
All right.
What is your superpower if you had one? What would you like it to be?
Right. We're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And you're listening to Sound Bites.
I still can't figure out the guy that melts things. What's something about that?
Well, it's not that he melts things, that he stole that power from somebody else. That's Siler.
No. The original guy that had the power, Siler.
Well, not all the powers are useful.
Yeah, there was an old
episode.
There was an old episode of Family Guy where a tanker truck of toxic waste crashed on their lawn, so of course they had to roll in it. And Peter got the morphing ability and could turn into anything, and Brian got super speed, and Lois got super strength, and Meg could grow her fingernails.
See?
And then Mayor Adam West went to roll around in the really played by Adam West to roll around in the toxic waste so he could get superpowers, and he just got sick.
Yeah, see?
Oh, that kind of hurt. You know, right, Megan, right. Megan, her super fingernail growth.
All right, there's a bug that affects the way Firefox handles writing DOM properties, according to a new post on the web. This vulnerability could potentially allow a malicious website to manipulate the authentication cookies for a third-party web page. There's something called the same origin policy. You have to, you know, if you're going to use a cookie, it's got to come from the website you're on. And this bypasses that, so an attacker could possibly tamper with the way sites are displayed or how they work. For users, this means the bug could allow for the browser to appear as if the user were connecting, for example, to a bank, when in fact the user would instead be receiving data from the attacker instead. The flaw is at the core of phishing attacks. The ability to mask a real site a user is visiting is how phishing attacks are successful. So the threat of this vulnerability is large. The vulnerability was tested using Firefox 2.0.0.1. Although the bug was listed as resolved, Mozilla Security Chief Windows Snyder, yes, Windows Snyder, said they would be addressing the vulnerability in the next update to Firefox version 2.0.0.2. There are no reported exploits, but they're working to address the issue as quickly as possible. So if you are using Firefox and are not running 2.0.0.2, which of course you're not because it isn't out yet, be very careful where you go and what you do. Our next caller is...
Well, that's always been a problem, but the browsers have been able to not catch it, but if you point to a URL, depending on what browser you're on, you either get a pop-up showing you what the real address is, or at the bottom of the window in the status bar, it shows you what the real address is.
Right.
So if it says citibank.com and you point to it and it says angelfire/something-or-other,
right,
then you know that's a fake link.
Right, but people have to actually look.
Yeah.
And that's
and a lot of them don't take the time to do that.
Right. All right, our next caller is Leo from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Leo. What's your question?
Hi there. I've been using AVG 7.1.
Yeah.
And now the update's out. Well, ever since they started... telling us about it. I've been trying to update and it wouldn't let me because of a problem, something about a kernel, blah, blah, blah. So it was suggested that I do a clean install. So I uninstalled it this morning and went to install the 7.5 and I got the same thing. Now I notice on the website it says no 64-bit support. Now I kind of took that to mean they meant the new whatever Windows and such, because I have the AMD 64, but that's what I've been using with the 7.1 with no problem.
No, yeah, they mean the 64-bit operating system.
No matter what type. So
are you on broadband?
Yes.
Download another copy. It's very possible you simply got a bad copy. I updated mine yesterday, and it ran fine. So I know it's not the program.
Yeah.
Right. So really the only choice, and of course I was on a 32-bit system, however.
Yeah, but what they're talking about is a Windows 64-bit operating system.
Yeah, the AVG is not compatible with Windows 64-bit OSs, not in the Athlon 64 processor.
Right. Not the
Athlon. What's your error message? You said kernel something. What's the actual error message?
Local machine installation failed, installation error, action failed for registry key hklm/software/classes/avg.kernel, creating registry key, access is denied.
All right, so you don't have access to edit your kernel. Are you installing this at, not the kernel, the registry, are you installing this as an administrator user?
Good point. No.
That's why. So yeah. The error message is correct. We just have to understand what it means, the problem with error messages.
You got to be, if you've got multiple users, you've got to be logged on as the administrator. Because if you're a limited user, then you don't have the authority to install anything.
Now, the installer should usually catch that when you start. You can't run this unless you're an administrator.
You said the key word, should.
Should, yeah. Usually, often. Yeah.
Okay. In a perfect world.
Yeah.
All right, simple answer to what I thought was a real tough problem. So once again, thanks, guys.
Our pleasure, Leo. Thank you.
All right, bye.
All right, our next caller is Tom from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I have a problem that occurs two or three times a week. I have Windows XP Home. I'll be working on a computer, and all of a sudden the mouse pointer just becomes ineffective. No matter where I point it, nothing happens. Can't close the program. The only thing I can do is shut the computer. After I do that, I get a message on a blue screen that Windows is checking file system C, and the type of file system is FAT32.
Which is normal after you crash the computer. Now, you're saying the pointer doesn't work or the button doesn't work on the mouse?
Well, I put the pointer on different areas of the screen.
So the pointer moves and points okay.
That's right.
So it's the mouse button that's not working.
And what was the rest of that message, FAT32?
Yes.
It's just the scan disk that automatically runs when Windows crashes.
But you can get rid of that by converting to NTFS.
Well,
yeah,
but
that's not part of the problem.
That's not his problem. His problem is the machine, mouse. It's not the machine freezing because you can still move the mouse, right?
Yeah.
And it's,
if you were to use the Alt F4 key, can you close a window?
No.
Or how about the Windows
the system
key
is locking
to bring up
it.
The Windows menu?
I haven't tried that.
Yeah, try using some of the key commands, because it may be your mouse button.
Well,
it may be the button activator.
And they don't work either.
Yeah, see, it's like the system is locking up, even though the mouse is there.
Yeah,
everything else, you can't click on the start bar. You
it's
can't
not
click
locking
on
enough to kill the mouse.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some other process is...
First, I got to say, start with have you danced the Security Tango?
I don't think I know what that means.
All right. If you go to securitytango.com, click on the Let's Dance button, print that out, and follow those instructions to the letter, you will check and clean your machine for any viruses and stuff like that. We often find that particularly people who haven't done any cleaning of their system will find that you have so many viruses and spyware and stuff that they're interfering with each other and locking up the system.
What's your record now, Dave?
That's the first clue. Geez. So try that.
150,000 spy programs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely dance the tango and let us know if that solves your problem.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
My pleasure. Yep. We have to take a break. The great and powerful Glenn of Lamberts is in to do the news and weather and sports and all of that good stuff. When we come back, we're going to talk about YouTube's anti-piracy software policy. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Mighty Dan Cole, who's sitting in to keep us all on the straight and narrow and make the world a pleasant place for us, which we heartily agree with. So check out the news and weather and sports. We'll be back with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Here we go. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
At 33 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundwaves. Glenn, that was astonishingly technically astute.
Well, that was one of the...
Dan Gates and Orgates, yeah.
The king of segues there.
Some of the questions on my last amateur radio exam had to do with NAND gates, you know, and how... When one pole of the device is charged, it won't let things through, but when the other one isn't, you know how that works. That's
who
how
invented the AND gate?
I know that. I can't remember, though.
It's Nikola Tesla.
I knew that.
Sure you did.
No, I'm lying. I haven't a clue.
Nikola Tesla.
He's invented the entire 20th century.
Exactly.
Probably.
Right.
Much, yeah.
He
yes,
truly,
yeah.
truly did. Everything yep. we do, we owe to him.
And the diode.
Exactly. All right. The media industry is clashing with YouTube over its proposal to offer anti-piracy tools only to companies that have that have distribution deals with YouTube. YouTube, which is owned by Google, plans to introduce technology to help media companies identify pirated videos uploaded by users, but the tools are currently being offered as part of a broader negotiation on licensing deals. The move contrasts with YouTube's biggest rival, News Corp's popular internet and social network, MySpace, which said on February 12th it would offer its own version of copyright protection services for free. YouTube's proposition that they only protect copyrighted content if there's a business deal in place is unacceptable, said a spokesman for Viacom, who owns MTV and Comedy Central and a whole bunch of other stuff.
And just asked YouTube to remove 100,000 illegal items?
Right, exactly. They did that just a little bit earlier this month when they failed to reach a distribution agreement. One media industry source likened YouTube's policy to a mafia shakedown. So we'll see what that is, what that's doing going on. Because the problem is, you know, a lot of us often find good stuff on YouTube. You don't get a chance to see Comedy Central. You can see some funny some funny bits from the Daily Show or Colbert
and
Report.
A lot of that, too, is if you go to that own network, they often have their own clips on their own website.
Right.
So one of the double-edged ironies with YouTube is that all the funniest stuff gets put up there. And they have their anti-piracy policy. If someone tells them something is illegal, they'll remove it. But then on the other side of that, you don't have to prove that you own the copyright. You just tell them you own the copyright, and they remove it.
Right.
So there have been people that have been hurt both ways.
Right. So it's an interesting little problem. I'm all for, you know, cool free stuff if it's available, but I'm certainly not for violating copyright.
Right. I got to see, you know, the trailer truck.
Yeah.
Head on there, come smashing into the parked police car.
Oh yeah, right.
Well, they had another one sort of just like that that I thought found interesting. It was over in New England, and evidently they had a bad ice storm. So you see these cars coming down the street, and they're trying to put on their brakes. No way. They're literally sliding and bumper carring all the way down, hitting other cars,
yeah.
And there's no way to stop it. They just get, you know, and it's like the momentum of the hill just takes them faster and faster, and they're just banging into one car after another. It was a good 10-minute segment, but it was pretty neat to watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. And some of that stuff will remain, but a lot of it will go.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is John from Leroy, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Trying to get into my MSN configure file, and it got an error come up.
And what was the error?
Windows cannot find MSN config. Make sure you type the name correctly. And
well, that's the first part. You didn't. It's MS config.
Yeah, MSCONFIG.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard you say MSN config.
No, if I did, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
And then to search for a file, click the start button, and then click
right, right,
search.
Right. What version of Windows are you using?
Home edition. Oh, XP.
Yeah. So if you do a search for msconfig.exe, it doesn't find it?
Yeah. There's a bunch of things that come up.
Somebody deleted it? Your hard drive is having directory problems and it can't find files that are there?
No, it could be because I had problems last week with it.
There you go.
Yeah, well, could have gotten damaged.
Yep. My first suggestion is back up all of your documents immediately, if not sooner. Because we often find that these are the first harbingers of a
Trojans.
Bad hard drive and whatever. So
okay,
back everything up, and then there are diagnostics that can be run.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring it to a reputable vendor like Dave or Steve,
mm-hmm.
They can do some diagnostics on the hard drive and tell you whether there's a problem with it, whether or not it thinks it's going, and maybe do a little repair work to it. But I would be very, very leery of doing a whole lot more important work on that machine.
Right.
And I
back
would be
up.
Very certain that I spent the afternoon backing everything up twice.
Mm.
Okie doke?
Yeah, thanks.
Sure.
Okay.
Bye.
Okie doke. I hate to give somebody bad news, but...
Yeah, but it's better to give them bad news before he can still do something.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, but at least we're forewarning.
At this point, it may already be too late if it's missing Windows programs.
Yeah, but
right,
if he can at least get his documents.
Yeah,
right. I mean...
All right, we are going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. When we do, we'll talk about a highly critical OS X flaw and some iChat vulnerabilities that Apple has patched. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Our next president must...
You're finding all
Benny
the good
Hill.
Music this week.
Benny
Welcome
Hill.
Back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole. And it's just such a fun time here. So, you know, you gotta throw this in.
That's exactly right. It's
what's the real name of this
hour.
Music?
Yeah, what is the name? It's the Benny Hill theme.
Yeah, was it anything else before the Benny Hill theme?
I'm sure it was. And I'm sure if the lines weren't jam-packed, I'm sure I would get a call right now telling me the real name of this song.
Yeah, right. Well, somebody can do that. It is 43 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, Apple shipped a set of 4 security updates on the 15th of this month, 15th of February, just a couple of days ago, meant to plug a list of vulnerabilities in its Mac OS X operating system and iChat messaging software, which, as we all know, never have any vulnerabilities.
No.
And some
no,
researchers-
we don't have any viruses.
right.
Now, there we go. Is a vulnerability in iChat a vulnerability in Mac OS X? It's a separate program that comes with it, but it's not the operating system.
Oh, please. But there were also 4 of them right in the operating system itself.
Yep.
And some researchers are calling the release highly critical. Among the four problems reported by Apple were two the company officials said could allow malicious hackers to exploit code on affected systems. Huh. Researchers charted the entire Apple bulletin as highly critical. The security software maker Secunia's second most severe vulnerability rating and urged users of OS X and iChat to update their computers immediately. Apple specifically moved to shutter security flaws that were identified as part of the Month of Apple Bugs research project, which was launched in January. And the security initiative was started, that Month of Apple Bugs thing was done by Ken Finistre and a guy who only goes by the screen name of LMH. And Apple noted that a proof of concept exploit code for all four of the security bulletins were previously posted. So definitely if you are a user of the OS X operating system, definitely go out there and get all these fixes. There's some for iChat and there's some for Mac OS X.
Your automatic software already popped up by now.
Right. All you have to do is say yes, go do these updates.
Yep.
Saying no to those updates is generally speaking a bad idea. So make sure you're updated.
And I found it. It's a 1961 single recorded by saxophonist Boots Randolph named Yakety Sax.
Yakety Sax. I did know that. I actually did know that. All right. Our next caller is John from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi. Good morning, guys. I don't know a lot about Apple computers, and I'm looking in the paper, and these fellows in Rochester are selling these G3s. And it says it has 512 memory, and it says it's running Tiger software. And I just wondered if I bought something like that just to play around with to learn about Apples. It's a lot less money than buying a new one. They want like $100 for it. I wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah, it's a 6 or 7 year old computer. It's sort of equivalent to a 386 maybe. So it's a good machine to play on. You won't probably be able to run any productive work on it because it's relatively slow. We're up to about a G7 or 8 now. They stopped using the G numerology last year, though. But we kind of progress along in the generation list.
Right.
So yeah, it's a fine old computer. I don't know if I'd have run Tiger on it. That's, you know, the current OS on a 7 year old computer. Is trying to run XP on a 386 might be tough.
Right.
It'd work, but
yeah. Right, but it would be very slow, and you'd need both a lot of patience and the understanding that you're asking it to do a whole lot more than it's designed to do.
And that's actually been a problem over the years in comparing Macs and PCs. That studies have shown that Mac users generally keep their Macs longer than PC users. 6 or 7 years is common for a Mac. 3 or 4 years is common for a PC. So the criticism that Macs were slower than PCs is because you're comparing a 7-year-old Mac against a 4-year-old PC. Of course, it's going to be slower.
Right.
But yeah, it's a great old machine. Yeah, we have a couple for sale ourselves, and we even have some older G4 towers for sale at our store too. A lot of people like them to play on, or for the younger kids these days, what used to be the mainstream workstation.
Right. It's not something you give to your kids to trash, right?
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate it.
There you go.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, John. It's never a bad idea to take an older machine to learn something on, but you need to know that it's older and you need to be patient. All right. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Thank you. The other car that had that AVG problem, I wasn't getting the same error messages as he was, but I kept getting for many days that I wasn't doing the update, although I was. And then I went, you know, a few days going, well, maybe this wasn't such a good idea to go to this AVG. And then I uninstalled, reinstalled, and did that a couple of times, and now everything is fine. And I was doing it under the administrator the whole time, so I was just calling to say that anybody that's having problems with that, you know, even if you uninstall once, maybe you have to do it a couple of times.
Right. Well, here's the deal, though, Jim. Right now, what the error message that people are getting says that 7.1 is out of date, and they need to update to 7.5, I think it is.
Yeah. Which, unfortunately, isn't an update. It's a whole new program you have to install.
Right.
You have to download
and
install it manually.
Most people are used to seeing, you have to update, and they hit the update button, and it updates their definitions. But in this particular case, you have to actually go to AVG and download a whole new version of the operating system. These things are all taken care of by the paid for version, but one of the things that you don't get from the free version is that that's handled automatically. You have to do that upgrade manually.
Correct. I did go. This is what I'm talking about, the 7.51, and I wasn't getting that error message, but what I was getting was that I wasn't updating, and so that's when I decided to go and uninstall and reinstall. So I am talking about the 7.5.
Oh, well, good. Well, I'm wondering if there isn't some sort of thing where it did not uninstall 7.1 correctly, or maybe you have to do that by hand. I don't remember.
Usually, when you do the 7.5, it will uninstall the 7.1.
If you had a problem with that would give you that. Well, thank you very much, Jim.
Right, and it was also when I was switching over to Vista, also at the same time, so that's why.
That's sort of a trick. Don't try to do two things at once. Do one thing at a time, make sure it works.
One last thing, I was talking to my sister about this show, Nick, and she said, I think I went to NAS with Nick, and I go, well, you must know. And she goes, does he ever say peaches? And that would be him.
That's me.
Yeah.
I'm a peachy guy. Thanks, Jim. Yes, I did go to Nazareth College. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back.
Is this a break?
Is this break music? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 50 minutes after the hour, and it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's
right. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 55 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. All right, kiddies.
I got to practice that, though, a little more.
Yeah.
Soundbites, boys.
Now you got it. Sit back, kiddies. Get on your footy jammies. Grab your little blankies and your teddy bears. Get your cup of hot cocoa. Everybody sit in a little semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can wake him up, it's story hour with Uncle Dave.
This week was interesting. Had one client bring in a machine. And sometimes, folks, you know, don't shoot the messenger. We didn't create the issue, so we can't always, you know, change it or whatever. But basically what had happened was somebody decided to do the Vista upgrade. They got it on, they got it working, but then decided, one, they didn't have enough horsepower in the machine because they're going to have to do some other serious upgrades and that type of stuff. Well, they wanted to go back to their old XP because it was running fine on that.
Nope.
Dan, can you kill that music?
Yeah, we're done with that music, yeah.
But they wanted to go back to the old XP. Well, here's the story, folks. Once you put Vista on your machine and get it there, if you had XP on it, it null and voids your XP number. So even if you try to call and say, well, yeah, you know, I got to put, you know, I'm putting this back on. You got to go buy another version of Windows XP.
And that's hidden somewhere in the license agreement?
Then, yeah, because literally Vista will null and void it so you can't reinstall. Because they're assuming that you're going to put that old copy of XP on some other machine. Not that you, why would you ever want to go away
Which technically used to be legal. Yeah, right. If you upgrade to Vista, then the license carries on. But if you buy a full Vista, you should legally be able to use your full XP on another computer.
Yes, you can do that. But what I'm saying is
if you buy an upgrade. See, that's never been legal, but there's never been a technical block against it.
But the thing that is, though, is if you change your mind and want to go backwards. Yep. Because you didn't have enough horsepower, you can't do that anymore.
All the old OSs used to have an uninstall and go back to the previous version.
Yes, and you were able to do that. Now Microsoft says, nope, evidently you're stealing that old version of XP because you want to pirate it and put it on some other machine. We know what you're doing. Not that, oh, you didn't want that eye candy and strain on your machine, you know, because It takes a lot of horsepower.
Now, on the other side of that, the salesperson who sold you that XP should have qualified you before they sold it, and maybe you don't want
Vista. They were working in shoes last week. How do they know?
That's the problem with the superstores. Now, Dave and I's store, you know, you come in and say you have a, you know, a P3 at 500 megahertz and want Vista, we'll say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. I just,
sometimes the customer isn't right.
Right, I just had somebody buy a machine, and it said, well, it said it's Vista ready.
Yep.
It is Vista capable.
Yes.
And so they put Vista on it, and Vista comes and says, you realize your video card is on our scale a 1.0. Well, they weren't lied to. The machine is, in fact, Vista capable.
Yes.
Just really badly capable.
With some major upgrades. And then that's the other side of this sword that Steve and I are going to be stuck with, is because a lot of these systems are, yes, you can put, they can get the upgrade certificates for Vista. And then we tell them what it's going to cost to actually do it. They think we're ripping them off.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Yeah, it's a couple, 3 hours easy to install, update drivers,
and
verify
hardware compatibility,
upgrade hardware. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're better off waiting a few more months for a new machine that has Vista already on it, but then make sure it's got, you know, 2 gigahertz, dual core, 2 gigahertz?
Dual core, 2 gigahertz.
Giga RAM minimum.
Easy.
512 meg or a gig of video RAM.
Yes, you need a very, very hefty machine. All right, we are going to take a break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in to bring you news, weather, sports, all the important stuff we listen to Wham for. When we come back, we're going to talk about drive-by web attacks that could hit your home router. We'll talk about what's going on our poll and everything else that we're doing. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the amazing Dan Cole. And we'll be back with all of you at 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Every week, before we get back to the phones, I'd like to talk a little bit about what happens on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Microsoft technical support. 333 of you answered, tying it for number 111 on the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. And the question was, I paid for Microsoft technical support. 48% of you said no. 30% of you said, oh, please. 12% said the Linux. 7% said the Macintosh. And 10 of you, only 10 of you, have actually paid for Microsoft technical support. This week's poll is about an interesting article I found this week. If you haven't changed the default password on your home router, do so now. That's what researchers at Symantec and Indiana University are saying after publishing the results of tests that show how attackers could take over your home router using malicious JavaScript code. For the attack to work, the bad guys would need a couple of things to go their way. First, the victim would have to have visited a malicious website that served up the JavaScript. That's a lot easier to do than you might think. Second, the victim's router would have to still have the default password that's pre-configured with it out of the box, and that happens way too often. In tests, researchers were able to do things like change firmware, redirect a D-Link system router to look up websites from a domain name server of their choosing. They describe these attacks in a paper. Here's how it works. You visit this malicious website, and inadvertently you open up your router to attack. The website can attack home routers from the inside and mount sophisticated attacks that may result in denial of service, malware infection, or identity theft, because everything you do passes through that router clear, and you could very easily end up being owned by this. So a lot of them have default password, like admin, You know, the username is admin, the password is admin, or the password is blank. And if you don't change that, everybody knows what they are, and they're using these codes to try to dig into your system that way. So make sure that you have changed the password router, the router on your password. And that's this week's poll. Have you changed your router's default password? The choices are yes, no, don't have a router, and password?
Yeah.
So, well, hold on. Just let me finish this up. So far, we've got 53 votes, and I'm delighted to say that yes is 53% of those 53 votes. So go ahead, Steve.
Well,
so
I would also suggest changing your router's name. It's always annoying. You know, I go to a customer's house, or you're just out in the public somewhere. You pull down your wireless menu, and there's six networks that say Linksys.
Yeah, right.
In fact, one of our customers, because we sell the Linksys router, it's a very good brand of router, which is why it's so popular.
Yeah.
One of our customers bought a Linksys router, took it home, went through the Linksys configuration to change the router name and password. Turned out it was his neighbor's Linksys router that he changed.
Oh, no.
So change the name of your router, too, while you're in there changing the
password.
There's
an idea, huh? That's actually kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
Painful for the neighbor, but kind of funny for this guy.
Well, all the neighbor's got to do is sit there and quick hit the reset button.
Well, yeah, no, but he put a password on. He changed the name, changed the password, put a wireless password on it, so now the neighbor can't get into his own network.
Yeah, right. No.
Unless he's wired.
All you got to do is go on to the backside of it,
hit the hard reset,
do a hard reset, and then go in and change everything and lock it down.
Yeah.
So
when you get your new router, in fact, most of the routers walk you through doing that now anyway, changing the admin password, changing the wireless name, adding a password, so things like that. It used to be you plug them in and they work. Well, that still happens.
Yeah.
But that, again, you know, something useful has been exploited by the bad guys.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, definitely make sure you've changed your router. If you have multiple routers, change them all. So that's an important thing to note. Our next caller is Lance from Kendall, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I got a external hard drive. It's a I can say the name, right?
Sure.
It's a Maxstor 200 gig.
Mm-hmm.
It's mounted in a Spezio carriage, and I plug it in with a USB.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've had about a year's use out of it. It's been pretty reliable, and it started not connecting to my laptop. I use it for backing up my laptop,
right.
And it started not communicating with it. I'd have to turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, and then it finally would communicate. And then one time I got it would communicate, and all of a sudden my hard drive, it wasn't recognizing any. I mean, it would go right to the hard drive. I could connect to the hard drive. But there was an error that popped up. So I took the hard drive out and I put it in another computer, and I had the same error. And so I ended up reformatting the hard drive, reformatted all right. I did a check on the hard drive. It looked all right. I put it back into the carriage again and tried to connect it to the laptop, and now it doesn't. It won't connect to the hard drive.
Could be the circuitry in the box itself. That you tried to hook up.
Well, that's my dilemma, I guess, is not knowing whether it was a glitch in the hard drive. Maybe there was something wrong with that, or in the box itself.
Old is your machine?
It's the brand new Asus.
Okay, then you know it's got USB 2.0.
Oh yeah, it all does. And as a matter of fact, you know, I've got several machines that I built myself, and they're all, you know, they're all high-end machines.
But,
Lance, would not recognize it at all.
Yeah, it's one of the two, certainly.
Well, if you've already done a full scan on the hard drive and the hard drive's coming back with no bad sectors, then it's the only other thing in the equation is that little box that's doing, you know, hooking. That there's a little circuit board there.
Right.
That you hook it up to, and then it's all with the hard drive, and that all slides into the box.
Correct.
So it's in that circuit board that something is getting shorted out, and I've seen that happen with some of them, and you know it's messing up the data that gets corrupted, and then that's causing your problems. So yeah, I'd look into getting another enclosure.
Yeah, that was my question. Was have you ever seen the BIOS?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've had some of the enclosure boxes, you know, just like anything else right now. They're mass made, and you know, even the best of brands can wind up with some flaws, you know, circuit board or anything else. You know, they can't test every one of them. They do sample testing, say, of the circuit boards because they make them by the hundreds.
Sure.
So, yeah, you probably got a bad circuit board and just need to get a new enclosure.
Well, I've had the box for quite a while. It's funny, why all you know, you would think that it would be the hard drive, but then because, you know, they wear out, you wouldn't think the circuit.
No, it could be, you know, just a bad capacitor or who knows what.
It easily could be that. And, Lance, the reality is entropy always wins.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for your information.
Yep. Sure. Have fun.
In fact, we've been going through a problem in the, 6 months to a year almost now. Apparently, there was a huge bad batch of capacitors from some manufacturer somewhere. Apple has had a recall on several models of their computers, Emacs and iMacs.
E-machines.
You know, a lot of different logic boards are failing because of these bad capacitors. And you can actually see them swelling or sometimes even leaking their dielectric fluid.
Yep.
Nice.
And so it's this huge industry-wide problem where all these different circuit boards are failing because of these bad capacitors.
So it could very easily be Lance's
case. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. All right, our next caller is Dave from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I got a Linux question for you.
Sure.
I get nervous going on checking my bank and buying stuff online. And I have a Linux Live DVD, so I can get on the net with that. Is that safer, you think, as far as no spyware and stuff?
Well, it clearly is never going to have any spyware because if you boot the thing, it's clean off the CD, and if the first place you go to is your bank, you should be okay.
Right.
Assuming that you've got your router password changed.
I don't have a router.
Well, there you go. That should be about as clean as you can get.
And the second and third things you want to do is when you go to your bank's address, make sure it's HTTPS for secure, and the web browser has a little padlock on the screen somewhere.
Right.
So that means that the information you're passing back and forth is also encrypted so that anyone along the line can't sniff it.
Right.
Okay. Well, they could, but they can't get into it.
They can get the data, but they can't break the encryption.
Well, that's sort of the joke about the encryption. You know, they say it will take supercomputers a million years to break the password or the encryption, or it could guess right the first try.
Right.
Well, the Linux was making me feel safer. I just wondered whether I should feel safer or not.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it's clear that there is no possible way that live CD, if it's from a reputable vendor... Right. So as long as it's a reputable vendor and like that, then you should be fine.
Yeah, it's like SUSE Linux or something.
SUSE is a good version of Linux. Yeah.
Okay. Well, great.
Well, there you go. You win.
Okay. Thanks much.
Thank you. Slowly, we turn to our friend Marty in Niagara Falls. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Hey. Good morning.
How are you?
I got two questions. One is I put Firefox on a Mac. And when I turn the computer off and then turn it back on, if I click on the link in the dock, I get a question mark.
Yeah, you've made a common mistake that everyone makes. When you download the Firefox image, you're downloading an installer, and then everyone runs Firefox off of the installer image. It's like putting a CD in and running the program from the CD.
Okay.
When that image isn't in the computer anymore, it doesn't know where Firefox is. So you have to put the CD back into the computer to actually run the program again. So with the Firefox installer, there's a little icon. They've tried to do it without words for people that don't speak English. On the Firefox installer, there's a little arrow icon pointing to your applications folder.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to drag the Firefox program onto your computer into your applications folder.
Oh, okay.
And so then it doesn't need the installer disk anymore.
Downloaded it off the net. So.
Right, yeah, and Apple has come up with this disk image file, a DMG, so that it's as if you put a CD into your computer.
Right.
So it's, and I see this all the time with Firefox, because it doesn't say in English, drag Firefox to your hard drive. So what people do is they are running Firefox off of the installer disk. And then when they restart their computer, the installer disk isn't mounted, so they get a question mark in their dock.
So drag that thing over to the hard disk icon, and it'll be
right. And then you can eject the installer disk, which will have shown up on your computer by then.
Okay.
And then you won't need that installer disk anymore because Firefox is now finished installing.
Okay. Well,
see, that's sort of the general confusion people have run into, that when you download something from the internet, you know, you want to run this program, so you have to download the link, you have to decompress the link, you have to install the program, then you can actually run it. And along the way, you may end up with the downloaded file, the compressed downloaded file, the decompressed downloaded file, the installer file, and then the real file you actually wanted in the first place.
And Macs, and they claim Macs are easy.
No, that's the same problem that happens on Windows.
It's put a whole bunch of
I can just go to the site and say, run it, and it installs it.
Well, because...
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Because in the background, it downloads it to the temporary directory, installs it, or decompresses it to the temporary directory, then installs it, and leaves the installer in the temporary directory. And that's where all your temp files get filled up from.
No, if you read it, and then you can remove it once you exit.
Right.
Then you have to know to do that.
You have to know to do that, yeah.
Well, it says it right there on the screen. Do you want to get rid of it? And you put a check mark and it says, yeah.
All right, we have to take a break. Thank you very much. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Dan Cole. When we come back, we'll talk about the Opera browser in some phones that you wouldn't believe they'd be in. It is 21 minutes after the hour. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When you wake up with Beth and Jeff.
Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And you are listening at 25 minutes after the hour to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Dan reminds me that I've completely forgotten to tell you what happens after you select the poll on our website at soundbites.org.
See, he keeps you on the street.
He does. If it wasn't for Dan, I don't know what I'd do. He keeps me straight and narrow all week long because he's a wizard with a blade. And here at Sundays, he's keeping me happy, so he's all good. Well, after you take the poll at soundbites.org, if you look in the yellow box underneath it, you will see a link that says, give us your opinion. That takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Oh, boy, fiber tablets. Yum, yum.
Oh, that hurts. Oh, that hurts.
Yeah, you're still hurting. Oh. Where you can actually enter an opinion. Here is my favorite, number 8. Thank you, Nick, for the update explaining why the server is not working. Why do you need some cash? I need some cash because I can't afford to buy a whole new set of stuff on my own. And it's not just the hard drive. But I am working on it. We will see if we can get the archives back up very, very soon. And when you're done looking around my website, I send out a newsletter.
How long ago did we have the fundraising for the archive server to begin with?
Yeah, a while ago.
4 or 5 years ago now?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good run for a computer that runs 24 hours a day, sucking files.
Exactly. It's a very, very well-used machine, let me tell you. Yeah. And don't forget, we're big in Denmark. All right, so that's what happens there. And then I just wanted to remind people of that. Here's my favorite little thing. Some of the first Windows Mobile 6.0 phones to hit the market will include Opera's web browser in addition to Microsoft's own web browser. Motorola's Q, as well as phones from High Tech Computer, Asus, and Toshiba, will include Opera Mobile. Microsoft launched Windows Mobile 6.0, the latest version of its phone operating system this week. Internet Explorer Mobile comes with the software, but a number of handset makers announced this week to also add the Opera browser, because most of the phones come with big screens and may be relatively expensive, so they want to offer customers a good browsing experience. People do want a quality browser when on Windows Mobile. And they believe, and I have to agree with them, that Opera's browser, which renders websites to fit inside the area of a mobile phone screen much better than does Internet Explorer, they believe that Opera is a better choice.
I've used the Motorola Q with Internet Explorer trying to get to websites. And we used to warn web designers about, well, you can't design for a 17-inch screen because most people still have 13-inch screens. Well, now I see designers doing for 20-inch wide screens, you know, because that's common.
Right.
But I've got a 2-inch Motorola Q screen. So I have to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll sideways and then scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll down.
Right.
Because it's
one of the things that I have not done yet is change the websites, both at Ask Nick and at Soundbites, to fit well on a phone, and I have to do that. Well, mainly because I don't use my phone for that. So,
yeah. Well, and that's sort of a general thing. People don't like using their phone for internet access because it's a pain,
right?
And that's one of the excitements about the Apple phone is that when you go to a website, it shows you the whole website in miniature to fit on the size of the screen.
And wait a minute,
but it renders it really, really, really clean. And they were using New York Times as an example, which is a notoriously bad website for tiny screens.
Right. And if anything, we're promoting computers, not phones.
Well, it's all the same
nowadays.
Well,
the phone is a
computer. No!
Nowadays, it's all the same. Okay, but here's the coolest thing. You can SMS Google, and it will send you back information. So, for example, if I do a text message to Google, whatever that 4554 something something, if I send them a text message that says, for example, M space 14620, it will send me back all the movies and their times in my area code.
See, I was trying
How freaking cool is that?
I was trying to do that last night on my Verizon phone because I'm a Verizon dealer.
You're right.
And I kept timing out, bringing up the phone listings. And I'm thinking, timeout, retry. Timeout, retry. No, crap, I'm paying for this.
Yeah, right.
Right. I'll hang up and find a newspaper.
But it works. Well, if you're doing it as an SMS text message, it comes in as a text message, and then you can just read it at your leisure. There's nothing to time out. And it's so cool. If you want to know about it, it's google.com/SMS. And you can get the weather and the sports and movies, stock quotes, driving directions, Q&A, area codes, calculator, local listings of various. It's so cool. It is so cool. So, for example, if I do M14620 on this thing, it'll actually come back and show me all the movies that are playing here.
We got a link on there.
Yeah, it's a google.com/SMS. Steve is putting it up. It's so cool. I just had to talk about it. All right, back to the phones. Our next
call. Well, then I'm going to say be careful because make sure you have text messaging plans on your phone.
Yeah.
Right. Otherwise, you're paying a bucket load of cash
just
to find something kind of silly. All right. Our next caller is Ann from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ann. What's your question?
Hi, guys. This is my semi-annual call from the dummy. I'm running...
How dumb can you be if you're smart enough to call us?
No. At least I can dial a phone still. I'm running XP. Mm-hmm. This is my problem. I've been using, at your suggestion, probably a year ago, Netscape browser.
Sure.
Okay. Lately, the last few days, I'm on a site, and it doesn't shut down, but it hesitates for over a minute. Then it starts running again. So I called technical support at Dell. They told me they thought I had a virus. To run the virus scan, I'm using Penicillin. I ran it, and it did find a virus, and I'm sorry I can't remember the name, but it started with AQ.
Okay.
And they told me to go into the control panel, find the virus, delete the file.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find it. It's not even listed there.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be.
Yeah, viruses hide themselves, so you can't delete them.
Then why would they tell me to go find it and delete
it? Oh, I'm sure they had some sort of reason.
Well, they got you to hang up the phone, and that's good for them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the deal, Ann. First, while we like Netscape, we're actually pushing Firefox rather than the whole Netscape.
And then Thunderbird.
And Thunderbird for email. But the deal here is that you probably do have a virus. I was about to suggest that anyway. And really the best way to clean it up is to dance the Security Tango, which again, you can find at securitytango.com. Click on the Let's Dance button, print that page out, and follow it step by step. That will clean off your entire system from viruses. Remember that at the bottom, you can then email Lori Lynch for a sheet that will explain how to maintain the Security Tango without having to run the whole thing over and over again.
As far as the Edward and Spybot.
Right.
Okay, my last question. I will try that. I switched over to Explorer.
Yeah.
It ran fine, no problem. Is that possible? It never hesitated. Nothing happened.
It's certainly a possibility. It seems to me unlikely.
Different, yeah. Well, it's different cache files, different history files.
Right. Well, that's the big thing. If it's a virus that's in your cache rather than in the system itself, then IE would be okay because it hasn't caught that particular one yet.
Within Netscape, if you go into the options, you can clear the cache in there.
Right. But I would suggest that in any case, before that virus gets out of the cache and infects your whole machine, you dance the Security Tango.
What's cache?
Cache is whenever you go to a website, the first thing it does is download all the pictures and all the text and stick them in a file on the hard drive.
Is that like temporary files?
A lot like it. It's specific to the web browser. It's called the cache, C-A-C-H-E. And the reason that they have it is because what they do is when you go to a website, it says, tell me the last time you were changed. And then it compares that to the last date it went and says, oh, I don't have to load it from the website. I can load it from my cache.
And it's got to be done from within the program.
Right.
It's got to be done from what?
Within the program.
Deleting the cache is done from within the program.
Oh, I see.
You'll see an option within
preferences.
The Netscape.
Right. Edit preferences will show you one of the choices will be for the cache, and there's a thing that says empty.
And I think it's under advanced. Down at the bottom there, you'll see in those options, advanced, and then down there, you'll see an item that for the cache.
Okay.
All right.
I already deleted all the temporary.
Yeah. Temporary files are separate.
Right?
Right.
Yep.
Okay. You've really helped me.
See, okay. You got it. You know what you're doing.
I'll call you in 6 months.
Okay. Thanks, Ann. Have a great 6 months.
Bye.
Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I recently purchased a Dell laptop, and somewhere, I guess, hidden on the hard drive, there's a backup copy of my operating system because I have the ability that when I hit F11, it can re-image the hard drive just like it came out of the box.
Yep.
Right.
They do that so they don't have to give you an actual CD. But if your hard drive fails, you're screwed.
Well, some
that's
of them,
a technical term, by the way.
Yeah. Well, some of them will even give you a utility that you can burn a DVD or so many CDs to create those files, those restore files or CDs.
So now, with that in mind, with that kind of ability, where we're just re-image my hard drive with Windows XP. Mm-hmm. Oh, what happens now when I don't buy Vista, I buy the upgrade to Vista? And I was hearing you guys talking about where it's going to null and void the license.
Right.
What's going to happen now when I load the upgrade version of Vista? And if I ever have to hit F11, is it going to re-image my
There's no
hard drive?
F11 anymore.
There is no more F11.
You're all done with F11.
Yep.
God.
And so here's the problem. Installing the upgrade will be fine. Reinstalling will be impossible because at some point it will say, I need proof that you own a copy of Windows XP. And you no longer have that proof.
And here's the other issue, though, with a laptop. One, you've got to make sure that it's not, you've got to get at least 1 to 2 gig of memory and make sure, this is critical, that memory isn't also being shared for part of the video memory.
Which I'll guarantee you it is.
Yeah.
There's a new term now, because I was looking this up yesterday, integrated video. They don't call it shared anymore because that sounds bad. Integrated video is also bad. You want dedicated video memory.
Right.
If I don't have this dedicated video?
Don't install Vista.
Don't do Vista.
You're not going to benefit from any of the new features of Vista.
Right. I got to go on my soapbox for one more moment.
Here we go, kiddies.
Again, well, let's put it in perspective. When Vista or XP came out, the main reason for going to XP was because we were getting rid of finally 32-bit and going to NTFS.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that was a major milestone. Both of you agree?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me, besides confusing the hell out of folks, you know, if they were to go to XP to Vista, the way they arranged things and put things, they moved everything around, and people have to relearn that. What big, significant benefit will the average user see going from XP to Vista?
They won't. Microsoft sees it because they get more of your money.
Right.
Exactly. But
there's no reason for people to move to Vista except for the eye candy.
Thank you.
Security
isn't much different. They're finding that it's...
There were viruses and flaws released for Vista before Vista was ever released.
Yeah, you don't get anything better off of that.
And
you
now that
don't.
Microsoft... Well, the big question was that Microsoft was going to abandon XP as soon as Vista shipped.
Now
and that would force you to upgrade to Vista to keep security updates. But now they've changed that, and Vista is going to stay around, or XP is going to stay around for 5 more years in updates.
Yeah,
right.
Well,
and even Microsoft is saying the average user will not, and in fact should not, upgrade to Vista for at least a year.
Will the F11 work if I go out and spend the hundreds of dollars for not the upgrade?
No,
the
F11
Vista?
Goes away when you upgrade to Vista in any form.
Okay.
It's gone.
All right. Well, all right. You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Yep. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Here's the big thing. If you go out and buy a Yugo and then complain that you can't move furniture in it, people will laugh at you.
Yep.
If you've got a Yugo and try to stuff Vista into it, people will laugh at you. Mm-hmm. Listen, we got to take a break. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mighty Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour. When we come back, we'll talk about the very first quantum computer on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
At 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. And I found this really cool thing. D-Wave Computing. D-Wave Systems, a Vancouver-based hardware firm, had a demonstration of what they claim is the world's first commercially viable quantum computer, the 16-qubit Orion. Touted as a systems-level proof-of-concept machine, the Orion uses a new type of analog processor that taps into quantum mechanics rather than using the conventional physics associated with today's digital processing to drive the computation. D-Wave maintained that its approach allows for the building of scalable processor architectures using many of the conventional processes and technologies employed in the semiconductor industry today. Furthermore, because Orion's processors are computationally equivalent to more standard devices, D-Wave says that any application can be developed for one type of quantum computer and then recast as an application for another. How cool is that? Basically, they said that D-Wave quantum computer does not, in fact, signal the end of digital computing, nor does it signal the beginning of the end. It does, however, mark the end of the beginning of quantum computers. That kind of paraphrases Winston Churchill's 1944 speech. But it looks pretty cool, this whole thing about quantum computing. You get much, much faster computers, and it should be pretty neat. We expected it to be decades before quantum computers were commercially available, but according to these folks, they're on the brink, so that's pretty neat. They see a future in which hybrid systems that use both digital and quantum computing solve some of the world's largest, most complex problems. That's
There's
pretty
also
neat.
People working on DNA computing. Leonard Alderman at the University of Southern California has a DNA-based computer. Instead of storing information in electrons, basically, it stores it on DNA.
Cool. Well, we'll see how that all works out as we go along in the future. In the meantime, we're going to Gary in Buffalo. Gary, what's the weather like out there?
Probably the same as where you have it. Cold.
Cold, miserable, a little bit of snow, yeah.
Yeah. I have a question. I had a catch-all email account, so when I would sign up for something or register software, I would use the name of the company at my website.
Right.
Unfortunately, some spammers are using randomly generated names at my website to send out spam, so I get 1,000 rejections at the catch-all. You know, the catch-all email catches all the rejections coming back because it doesn't know who it's coming from.
Right.
So the solution, of course, was to eliminate the catch-all and put in individual email accounts for all of those catch-alls I had created and that I still need, which means I got about 20 to 40 of them, and hopefully they'll wane away eventually. But now, having done that in Outlook, put those 40 email accounts in there, I'm looking for a way to back those email accounts up so that if something happens, I don't have to go through it again.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, I can't find a way to do it.
You have to find the identities folder. And then you can back that identities folder up. It's in one of the invisible folders. It actually might be.
Yeah, it's under documents and settings. You've got to then change your view for protected folders and say show those.
And is this Outlook or Outlook Express?
Outlook 2003.
Yeah, I think we already have a link on our website for backing up Outlook identity folders.
Right,
and that would include the email accounts.
Yeah, the entire identity, the username, the password, the old
all
emails,
the messages,
all
the
account,
deleted
message,
ones,
the contact list, everything.
Yeah, I can do that with the PST. I mean, I can do the messages and the contact list and all that with the, you know, just backing up the PST. But
right.
But that, when you restore the PST, it does not restore the email accounts themselves.
Oh, those are in the registry, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you make your new Outlook and import the PST, doesn't it? Let me see if that would work.
Yeah,
you're talking about backing up the accounts, so not the mail.
That's right. So that I don't have to reinstall
the account.
Yeah, you can't do that because it generates a random sequence of letters and digits when it creates the identity folder. I've tried doing that, copying a mail from one computer to another, and it doesn't work. So what I've done is on the new computer, create the Outlook email account name, which then generates the random folder name, and then I copy the files into it, and that usually works.
Oh, right, okay. But there's no way to just back up the accounts. Now, there are some third-party software.
That's what I was going to ask, if you knew of any.
The only one I know of is called Backrex Outlook Backup, which is supposed to also back up the accounts. There is a 30-day trial version, so you can download that and give it a try. I'll give that to Steve during the next commercial, which is coming up, and we'll get that on our posted on our list after the next commercial.
All right, good. Thank you.
I just found another one, too, from the TechSpot blog list as well.
Perfect. So we'll get both of those up for you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Sure. Now, that's an interesting problem, and Outlook makes it even more interesting. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We'll talk about online document word processing and spreadsheets. It's 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. It's not an only, Dan. It's not only at all. It is 53 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites. Listen, we've talked before about Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets. You actually have a word processor and a spreadsheet online. They're actually now making them available as part of Google Apps for your domain. So let's say you have your own domain. You can click on the link and bang, you're in Documents. Bang, you're in Spreadsheets. They also have a thing that lets you use Google Mail for your email right through your own website. It's still your email address and everything else. It's just that Google handles all the mail. The same with their instant messaging application called Talk and their voice chat service and their calendar. You can get all of that on your own line. It's Google Apps, and you can get to them at google.com/A. A for apps. How cool is that? Our next caller is Terry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Terry. What's your question?
I just had DSL installed, and the...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Frontier came in and installed it. How do I check to find out whether or not they gave my wireless a new name and what the current password is on it?
Is that inside the DSL router itself?
Does it have an antenna on your DSL router?
Yes.
They should have given you the current username, password, and router name.
Might be in the booklet that came with it.
Okay. I'll have to check that. Yeah, is there any way I can look that up on the computer itself?
Well, you'd get, see, the thing that it, key thing of it is, to get to the router, what you got to do is open up, say, like Netscape or one of the browsers, and you've got to put in that IP address that gets you into that screen.
Of the router. So you need to know that.
And it opens up.
Generally, that's 192.168.0.1 or 192.168.1.1.
Oh, yeah, that sounds familiar.
There you go.
And then it's going to want a username and password.
So you need to know the username and password Frontier assigned to that router.
Okay.
And that should be in the documentation they gave you.
Yeah, that would be in there. And then you can go ahead and change it.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you. Bye. That's a very important question for everybody. For if you have DSL or cable, any sort of broadband.
Mm-hmm. That has an antenna on it.
Right. Either way, you want to know
if you got a router
how
hub.
To change that, right.
Well, the standard routers, you typically cannot get into the router administration screen. But the wireless routers, you can get into the wireless administrator.
No, I get into... Right. Mine's not wireless. I've got some folks that don't have wireless built into them. You can still get into them.
You can log into the Roadrunner router. What's the username and password?
Yeah, right.
No, I'm saying Linksys.
Right, yeah, that's your own router.
But we're talking about the one from them.
Right.
If it's not wireless, you can't get into it.
Right.
All right, our next caller is Patty from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question on Thunderbird and Firefox.
Sure.
I tried downloading them both. And I can pull up Firefox, but when I pull up Thunderbird, the screen comes up, and then it says immediately, alert, connection to server, pattymail.com timed out. I don't have anything called Patty Mail. And then when I go to do a test, like send myself a note, it gives me a message that sending a message failed, an error occurred, sending mail, unable to connect.
What it sounds like is that it was not correctly
configured.
You don't have to do any real configuration to Firefox. That will always work. But when you set up Thunderbird, you need to put in...
Well, the first thing it should do is ask if you want to transfer your existing account from Outlook Express.
Yes.
And did it want to do that?
Did it ask you to do that?
Yes, it did, and I said no.
There you go.
So now you have to type in all your account information manually.
The easier way
username,
to do it...
Username, password, and email settings.
But the easier way to do it is uninstall Thunderbird.
Okay.
Then reinstall it. This time when it asks you to import your stuff from Outlook, say yes.
Did you used to use Outlook Express?
Yes, all the time.
Yep.
Yep.
Say yes, and it will import all the settings for you
and the
automatically
emails.
And all the emails, so it'll be just like you were under Outlook Express, only it'll be Thunderbird, so it's safer and easier and cleaner.
Yeah, if you want to configure it all manually, it's under, what, Tools, Accounts, is it?
Yeah.
Or Settings,
Accounts.
Yeah,
you can do it yourself under Settings.
But then you gotta
know, you have to know all your mail server
names
and usernames and passwords.
Tools, Account Options.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Right.
And what did you say to use instead of Windows Office?
OpenOffice.
It's at openoffice.org.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the for openoffice.org.
Yep, OpenOffice at openoffice.org. It's a completely compatible office suite. It has a word processor. It has a spreadsheet. It has a presentation program like
PowerPoint,
and it has a database option, kind of like Access. And it is 100% free, and it works like a charm. You can, in fact, read and write office-formatted documents. So it's a pretty neat deal all the way around.
Okay.
All right, we are done. Sorry?
More quickly, if I do say yes to the whole thing,
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the whole point is it copies all of your settings and mail from Outlook to Thunderbird, so you don't know the difference.
Yeah.
You just have
you
a much safer
that?
Program.
I
heard it.
Okay, good for you. Yep. Listen, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to thank everybody who joined us in the chat. They were pretty quiet this week, but at least they joined us. We'll be back next week. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Dan Cole. Maybe Rob Linton will be back, but we love Dan, too. We do. I'm Nick Francesco. You have been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, and we will get the archives back online as soon as possible. It's Soundbites, and it's on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening. See you again next week.